Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the next step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Yes, that was just really strange how that all surfaced. It just came about. Yeah, if you've been watching the Democratic National Convention, Mari Manoukian was one of the speakers a couple nights ago. And she was wearing a chain with the letter E, the seventh letter of the Armenian alphabet. Well, I didn't notice that when she was speaking, maybe because my eyes aren't up to it. But it was brought to my attention on a Facebook post. Someone had taken the video that we had made a few years ago about that letter E and said, hey, if you're wondering what Mari Manoukian was wearing, check out this guy. Father Vazgen, check out what he has to say about the letter. Yeah. So anyway, I was very honored that I somehow got a chance to connect with the world stage on this one. Anyway, we will put a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. Today, I have a very special treat for you that started off with a very tragic event. A month or so ago, there was a demonstration at the Azerbaijan consulate here in Southern California. Armenians, because the Azeris had come into Armenia, into Tavush, and they had started their campaign of aggression against Armenians. Armenians here at the Azerbaijan consulate were protesting that event when all of a sudden some demonstrators came from the Azerbaijan group. And they tried to do a counter-protest. Now, you've got to remember that, you know, there's hundreds of Armenians. They're all there. They're protesting. They're trying to make a peaceful protest. And all of a sudden, these people come and they're doing a counter-protest, calling them names. And you could imagine that tempers are flying, but still, the people are relatively calm. And to help out with police, there is an Armenian priest there, Father Balaramyan, who takes a megaphone and he tells the Armenian protesters to calm down, keep it calm and orderly, basically helping the police. Now, in return for his good deed, he was smacked right in the chest by the police, by Los Angeles Police Department. And a witness to that event, who called the ambulance and had the priest taken to the local medical center, happens to be our guest today, Joseph Kazazian, along with a lawyer, Greg Giragosian, who is bringing charges against the Los Angeles Police Department on behalf of Father Balaramyan. Now, this is all, you know, just par for the course these days here in America. I know we have so many followers from outside of the United States. Today, we're going to be focusing in on this. And you're saying, okay, Father Vazgen, wait, we opened up to the next step. Where's our spirituality? Blessed are the peacemakers, says our Lord, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are you when you are persecuted. And there is an addendum. There's a caveat, right? Blessed are you when you are persecuted for what? For my sake. Well, guess who got persecuted? A priest who was standing there for whose sake? Yes, for the sake of peace, for the sake of love, for the sake of Christ. He was a priest of the Armenian church. He is a priest of the Armenian church. And he was hit as a priest of the Armenian church, a priest of Christ. Blessed are you when you are persecuted for my sake. There you go. Anyway, you know what? Those of you who've been listening to me for all these years know that for me, if you're going to kneel down, you're going to pray, you're going to light your candle, you got to remember that we're praying for wisdom, we're praying for strength, we're praying for courage. Why? So that we can be the hands, the feet, the mouth of God here in this world, of Christ, to be able to speak out against injustice, to be able to offer that hope, to be a source of love in this world. So I'm very excited that we have these two guests, Greg Giragosyan and Joseph Kazazyan. And I also want to make a mention that all things happen for reasons. We did this interview on August 18th, a couple days ago, and it happened to be the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage. And you know, that originally was called Susan B. Anthony Day, because Susan B. Anthony, as a protest that women could not vote, she went out and voted. That was her way of protesting. So I thought it was very appropriate that we sat down right on that day, August 18th, and on the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, and did this interview. Anyway, I know you're going to enjoy this interview where we talk about all things, about not only protest, about what happened to this priest, but also about just some basic responsibilities that you have. Those of you who have been to my office know that there's two beautiful icons. One, of course, the church icon of Christ, and the other one is a framed Declaration of Independence, which I find it to be a sacred document for me, especially with the past that we've had as Armenians, to be able to find a place where a country that has such values. But those values don't come cheap. They come with protests. They come with people actually standing up for those rights. That's what we're going to be talking about today. This, by the way, this interview starts off as a video. It will be available next week. This is the audio portion. And you, as Next Steppers, get a sneak peek. Or a sneak here, I guess. Doesn't work. Sneak peek. Okay. A big shout out to my dear friends Vahe Sarkisyan and Aram Musoyan at the media department at the Western Diocese, who shot this and made this audio possible. All right, without any further ado, let me introduce my two guests. One is Greg Giragosyan. He is a lawyer practicing here in Southern California with Giragosyan Law. His expertise in civil rights cases, and he is the one, as I said a few minutes ago, is bringing up charges against the LAPD. The other is Joseph Kazazyan, criminal lawyer, also practicing here in Southern California. He is a community activist, has been very active with the ANC. He's done some incredible writing. I will have links to both of these attorneys on today's show notes. You could check them out, but also check out Kazazyan's writings in through the years, what he's been addressing. Both of them, just it's an honor to know them, to have them in the studio, and it's a pleasure to present them to you, our Next Step listeners. That these two gentlemen are with me today to talk about what happened a couple weeks ago and what its implications are. So let me begin with you, Joseph. Tell us what happened. We know that there was some demonstration and then got out of hand, I guess.
That's correct. So as many of our viewers do know who happen to be Armenian, and those who don't, we are in the middle of a conflict with our belligerent neighbor, Azerbaijan. And as a result of that, protests were organized by the AYF in support of our troops back home in Armenia, who are essentially fighting in the middle of a pandemic against Azeri aggression. And as a result of that, these protests were organized in front of the Azeri consul in Los Angeles. For the most part, the protests were very peaceful. Everybody was following the proper guidelines. In addition, in the middle of that protest, it was clear that the Azeri side was armed, and we now have video evidence of that. And through the process of, you know, keeping these two sides separated, a scuffle escalated. I want to say maybe fortunate enough, maybe right place, wrong time, wrong place, wrong time, I don't know, to witness some of the events that occurred. And had a very good understanding of who the aggressors were in this situation. And when the violence broke out, so to speak, it started over Azeri protester as he was walking by what appeared to be a car who was coming down the opposing street, which had Armenians in the passenger compartment, took the flagpole and tried to assault some of the young women in the car who were, if I were to guess correctly, were under 18, so underage. Yeah. And some of the people who were behind the police barricade noticed that. And when that occurred is when everything kind of came to a head, and which culminated in one of our priests within the Armenian church being struck by an LAPD police officer.
And he was just struck because he was standing there? Was he?
What I witnessed was that he was there to make peace. Mm-hmm. And you quoted from Matthew, which, blessed are those who are peacemakers, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And that is essentially that was his function there.
He was
not only there exercising his rights, but he was also there to make sure to keep the peace. And he was also working in conjunction with some of the LAPD officers to make sure that, calm was maintained.
And so, Greg, you are representing this priest, Father Balaram, yeah?
Correct.
And so what's that representation entail? What, were you representing him against, or what's the case?
I'm representing Father Bagramyan in a civil rights action against the Los Angeles Police Department, and specifically one officer, Officer Ruiz, who was essentially the officer who used excessive force against Father Bagramyan. And the incident kind of begins, an hour before that use of force against Father Bagramyan. It begins with the officers there maintaining a line between the Azeri group and the Armenian group, and everything seemed to be settled. But throughout that time, Father Bagramyan was working hand in hand with the police on a speakerphone, telling at least the Armenian side to stay behind this line, to stay calm, don't go over there, just things of that nature, trying to keep everything calm. So he's working with the police officers, and then suddenly there was, I believe, another altercation between a counter-protester from the Azerbaijan side and a peaceful protester, essentially from our side. Wow. When an officer saw Father Bagramyan walking on his megaphone, trying to keep the peace, and immediately barrels the gun into Father Bagramyan's stomach. And keep in mind, he's wearing a full traditional black frock with a cross. He's unmistakably a man of God, a clergyman who's been there helping the officers throughout this time, and then gets hit very forcefully in the stomach, falls back, and as he's trying to maintain his balance, he grabs the item that's essentially buried into his stomach when he's again really forcefully hit with a heel kick to his chest.
Oh.
And then luckily Joe was there and other people were there to help Father Bagramyan, who ultimately was taken by ambulance to, I believe, UCLA Medical Center.
So I noticed immediately he was in discomfort. He was definitely in pain. I think he was shocked at the extreme and outrageous conduct demonstrated by the LAPD. Mm-hmm. And having the background that I do, being an activist and also having a legal education, sometimes people like me have to be there at the front lines to make sure everything, I have to be observant of what's going on. And I guess being there in that situation and not too far away from where the incident occurred, I was there in the immediate aftermath. I along with several other protesters, several of our compatriots, were convinced that he was injured. So we made sure he got on an ambulance.
So let's talk a little bit about this, about protest in general. This is, I think, guaranteed to us by our Constitution, isn't it?
Correct, in the First Amendment.
In the First Amendment. Can you elaborate on that? What is the guarantee? Am I free to just go out there and yell, scream? Can I damage property? What is the extent, or what's defined as protest?
In layman terms, the First Amendment allows your right to freedom of speech. That means to share whatever opinion or belief you might have. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everybody's heard this kind of analogy before. That does not give you the right to run into a crowded movie theater and yell, fire, fire, fire. That's free speech, but it's not protected speech.
I see.
Similarly with protests, the First Amendment allows you the right to assemble and to protest, essentially. But that does not give you the right to do whatever you want during that protest. A lot of times protests, you need some sort of approval to be on a certain street at a certain time if you're going to block traffic. You can't just crowd a street and say, hey, that's my right. I'm protesting. I can do whatever I want. That's not true. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're abiding with the laws of where you're protesting, there should be no problem. You cannot be prevented from protesting.
One of the questions I know keeps coming up, especially because we deal with so many immigrants who have just come here, do these laws, do the protections of the Constitution apply to everyone or to citizens only?
It applies to everybody.
Anyone?
Correct.
So this priest, his citizenship should never be questioned. He happens to be there and he's involved in a protest. So he's covered by all the rights.
Assuming his citizenship was illegal for whatever reason, or he's not documented or whatever, he would still have the right to bring a civil rights action. He's still protected by the First Amendment. What that might do to people in terms of another organization looking into you is a completely different story. But in terms
of course,
bringing a civil rights action, they are not allowed to argue, you're not even a citizen, these rights aren't intended for you. That's just not true. That's
right.
Incorrect.
On that same line, Joe, I know you've been with the, as a community activist, you've been with ANC. A few years ago when Turkish president was visiting the White House, there was an incident where his bodyguards engaged with some Armenian Americans who were standing there. And I was annoyed because all of the press was about the Turks were at the Armenians instead of saying these were Americans. This is my country, and these Turks have come here beating up Americans for just standing there with a sign. And
sure. One of the earliest concepts that I had as a child growing up in the United States, God rest his soul, my old history teacher used to tell us, you have to be 100% Armenian and you have to be 100% American, and mm-hmm. you would think you're a 200% entity. And a lot of times, being an activist in this community means exactly that, meaning you have the enjoyment of all of your rights, the full bevy of rights that's guaranteed to you under the Constitution. In addition, you have close ties to your homeland. And me being first generation born in the United States, you know, my ties to the homeland are closer than a lot of our, you know, predecessors are, as far as Armenian Americans are concerned, you know, third generation, fourth generation, pre-genocide even, we've had a community here. But being an Armenian in the United States has had its burdens as well. I mean, we had racially restrictive covenants that were placed on us, you know, in the Central Valley when we first moved to Fresno. You know, it was illegal for an Armenian to buy a house until that was overturned by the Supreme Court in the 60s. So we've had our fair share of discrimination, you know, name calling, you know, I think, and I don't mean to sound offensive, but we were called Fresno Indians. We were called a lot of names that, you know, we were treated less than in a lot of senses. As far as being Armenian today is concerned, you know, the biggest discussion is always about human rights. And when you're talking about human rights in the American sense, you're also talking about your constitutional rights, right? So you have your Bill of Rights, you have equal protection clauses, due process clauses, you have your 14th Amendment rights. So those are all very relevant today. And when you're speaking specifically as an Armenian in the 21st century, in 2020, in Los Angeles, you have the double-edged sword of knowing oppression in a very unique light, because you come from people who are oppressed, and you have inherently a sensitivity to oppression today, namely for other races, you know, religious minorities, the whole gamut.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about this idea of protest and growing up Armenian here. We go out every year on April 24th, except this year because of a pandemic. Mm-hmm. But we're out there and we're marching peacefully. People will look at that and they'll say, well, what more do you want? This is a story that comes to us from 100 years ago. What are you guys protesting? If you're going to protest, go to Turkey and protest. What are you doing in the middle of United States? Explain to me what's the the goal of our protests?
I think the main thing is to gain attention for any cause. A lot of time a group is been discriminated against or gone through a genocide, whether it be years ago or just last year. And oftentimes your last recourse is to protest that sort of behavior or to gain recognition and to make sure something like that never happens again. That's the main reason why people protest. It's to either cause change, bring awareness, or bring justice. And Joe can elaborate.
I mean, I think Greg put it perfectly. The only thing I might add is, you know, when we say never again, those are not just empty platitudes. Clearly, genocide is a crime that still occurs. You have instances of it all around the world, whether it's publicized or not. So what's our job and what's our duty as Armenian Americans, especially as Armenian attorneys and Armenian activists, is to basically be the voice for those who were voiceless. I mean, for 50 years after the genocide, our community lived in collective shame because not only do they have all this trauma that they went through, but to talk about that trauma, to let alone protest about that trauma, was unheard of. And it was really in three parts, and it happened in three separate places. The first was the United States, where you had, in 1965, 50 years after the genocide, it was at the height of the civil rights movement. You're talking about the Soviet Union, where for the first time, people were gathering in their masses and saying, Med Horeda, our lands. Mm-hmm. And it was this concept of a global Armenian movement. And the first place, mind you, this is probably my favorite factoid about our cause, is in Uruguay, of all places, the Armenian genocide was recognized for the first time in 1965. So you have this collective consciousness of, we just went through this tragedy, and 50 years later, we're starting to become vocal about it. Mind you, the term genocide hadn't been coined until 1943. By Raphael Lemkin, who was instrumental in the UN Convention on Genocide. So the long and short of it is, you want to raise awareness because it's not just about one type of crime where it's genocide. It's about injustice everywhere, because if you don't call out the injustice early on, it could lead to genocidal action.
So it's important to just be out there. Well, in that sense, 1965 civil rights movement, it kind of like pushed us a little bit, maybe a lot. I know it was at that time that we started to work on the monument here in Montebello. Do you think that that's that moment with the killing of George Floyd? Do you think with Breonna Taylor, these incidents happening, is that pushing us as Armenians? Is this a time for us that we need to grab on to what's going on in this country? Would these things just be independent of these events?
Sure. And I think that's a fair point to raise. I think at the very least, at the bare minimum, the time and place that we're living in right now is going to force us to have those uncomfortable conversations. What is our role as a people? Mm-hmm. How are we as allies to other races, to other people who suffer injustices of all kinds, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the bare minimum. And I would posit that it is very important for us as an oppressed people to take a stand, to make our voices heard, to be genuine allies, you know, to build those coalitions. And, we live in a very unique time, because if you were to ask me 10 years ago that we'd be seeing this civil strife that we're seeing in this country as it pertains to civil rights, I would have been like, you know, maybe civil rights is a foregone conclusion. Like, we've won all the battles, but clearly that's not the case. And clearly I would have been naive saying that. To see what we're seeing today, especially, I mean, in the context of my line of work with criminal law, we see disparity in sentencing. We see how certain people are treated like others, even our own, even as Armenians, we're treated differently by the criminal justice system. So I think it's very important to be aware of that and to raise awareness about that, because if we don't, it's the status quo. You are losing your civil rights every time a court comes out with a decision that's not in your favor because somebody refused to fight about it.
I know you want more. Don't worry, there is more. There's a second half to this interview coming up after the Song of the Day. Every week we play a Song of the Day right about midway in our podcast. Gives us a little chance to digest what we've been listening to, absorb, kind of reflect on those, and then also to highlight and showcase one of the artists. Today we are going to an album that was released a couple years ago, and we were very proud, part of the In His Shoes ministry. We sponsored that album from artist Gor Mkhitaryan. And we're very proud that we've made two albums with the artist. The first one was called Spirit. This one was called Passport, and it had a unique twist to it, and we were talking about issues of social justice, social issues that were taking place. All we talked about, for instance, domestic violence, which had to be, you know, brought to forum, put a spotlight on it. I mean, it was happening. It still is happening, and, you know, there's a quiet to it. By the way, this is off the side. Keep October 22nd. Mark it on your calendar. This year, yeah, well, no, I'll tell you about it later, but we're going to be doing an event with the YWCA about domestic violence. Just put it on your calendar and trust me that you're going to get to, because it's going to be virtual this year. You're going to get to be a part of it. So put it on your calendar for right now. But we produced this album called Passport, Issues of Social Justice. We're talking about immigration at the time. Anyway, this particular song, a cut off of that album, is called Paradox, for obvious reasons. Enjoy.
Սարդեն գարկը գլխում, ուրիշ չապման աշխարից էր նա, ես այդպես էլ չէ դարձանրապես, հարթությունները մեր չեն հատվել, քո պատմության մեջ ես չեկան, իմ պատմության մեջ դու չեկաս, իսկ ումն է այս հիշողությունը. Արդյոք տիեզերքն էր մեղավորը, անամբ երկինքը նոր երկրի, կամ էլ պակասն անտարների, ու կարոտը հարազատ ճահճի. Պարոդոքս է սա, համամ մարդկային, կան ցավում մարդկային, անբացատրելի, միշտ ձգտելու է, ձգվել դեպի այև, այս չհասնել երբեք այն ինչ չունենք. Պարադոքս է սա, համամարդկային, կամ ցավում մարդկային, անբացատրելի, միշտ ձգտելու է, ձգվել դեպի այև, այս չհասնել երբեք այն ինչ չունենք. Ապրեցինք մի քանի տարի, շոշափելով մութությունը, մենք այդպես էլ չգտանք փարոս. Արդյոք տիեզերքն էր մեղավորը, թե անամբ երկինքը նոր երկրի, կամ էլ պակասն անտառների, կարոտը հարազատ ճաճի. Պարադոքս է սա, համամարդկային, կամ ցավում մարդկային, անբացատրելի, միշտ ձգտելու է, ձգվել դեպի այն, բայց չտեսնել երբեք այն ինչ ունենք. Պարադոքս է սա, համամարդկային, կամ ցավում մարդկային, անբացատրելի, ձգվել դեպի արև, չհասնել երբեք, նրանք ես ճանապարհ. Պարադոքս է սա, համամարդկային, կամ Zaun aufgehen, dann bald Saltrini, nicht zu kleben, zu quälen wie ein, weil es ein Schild ist, nein, der Weg, ein Schildurek. Paradox ist er, Hammer aufgehen, ganz Zaun aufgehen, dann bald Saltrini, nicht zu kleben, zu quälen wie ein,
the unmistakable sound and talent of Gor Mkhitaryan. I hope you enjoyed that. It is off of his Passport album, an album that we produced a few years ago with In His Shoes Ministries, talking about social concerns, social issues in our community. This song Paradox kind of puts it all together, sort of appears toward the end of the tracks. And if you listen to the entire album, you kind of get an idea of that it's not a concept album, but it all comes together. Anyway, there will be a link on today's show notes to Gor Mkhitaryan, to his music. Get to know the artists, and as I always say, you know, let's support these people that just bring so much beauty to our lives. Now we return to our interview with Joseph Kazazian and Greg Giragosian. Greg, as a civil rights attorney, what would you say? We hear a lot of people say, you know, get out there and vote. We hear people saying that you stand up for it. What would you say is the single most important thing that we need to do as individuals?
I think the answer is simple. I think educate yourself. Mm-hmm. Educating yourself on your rights is not an easy task, but it's a task that can be done. And thanks to people like you who are having the conversation, and bringing light to what somebody's rights are is exactly what, one, the Armenian community, and honestly, the entire country, is something that needs to be done. We're hearing a lot of people, every day there's a new video of somebody in a store yelling about their rights with respect to wearing masks. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I'm always like, you don't know the first thing about your rights. Why are you yelling about anything when you're clearly unaware of what your rights are and what kind of protections you have and what an owner of a private business can do or not do when you're in their store? People are not educated. And I think that's the first thing that needs to happen for us to protect ourselves. And with respect to your last point and George Floyd, you know, that was a culmination of years and years and years of that sort of brutality that went unchecked for so long, where it hit a boiling point. And we see now these protests have evolved not just about police brutality, but about various disparities we're seeing in our society, whether it be a wage gap, whether it be people who don't have, you know, the ability to make a living. The topics are growing one by one, because I think people are realizing if we don't protest, if we don't bring awareness to an unjust situation, it's going to keep getting worse and worse and worse until we see a George Floyd type situation in another scenario. And we've been seeing in Los Angeles alone, the homeless situation has gotten so out of hand. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, no one's been doing anything about it for so long. Of course, it's going to get worse and worse. And now people are out protesting that. And I think a large part of it is because this started with this outrage from what occurred to George Floyd. So in a sense, this has been a wake-up call for our country, not about just police brutality, but about many, many, many things.
Mm-hmm. I was up in Fresno over this weekend, and when you mentioned that about some of the difficulties we had as Armenian people back in the 30s, I remembered, because I saw so many names. The Borossians had changed their name to Paul, Bedrosians to Peters, and we had to do this just for survival, nothing else, just so we can get along in this life. If you had something to say to Armenians today, what is the challenge in front of us as Armenian Americans living here in this country?
Well, if I were to list all the challenges that we have as a community, I don't think we'd have enough airtime on the show, to be quite frank with you. But I think it's not so much the challenges as to what we can do as, first of all, as the first Christian nation. It's also what we can do as human beings, as fellow compassionate individuals. Show love. It's as simple as that. Love your country. Love your neighbor. Understand that you are, and maybe this might sound a little ethnocentric, but we kind of are chosen in this weird sense, because we've survived so much. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, while there is oppression everywhere, we are not seeing 1915 or Turkey. You know, we're in the United States in 2020. Right. And we have a voice, and it's up to us individually or collectively to use that voice for good, to use that voice for love.
We're not seeing 1915 Turkey, but in Armenia something is happening, and something's been happening for several years, but it came about a few months ago when we were attacked by the Azeris. Can you address that? What brought on this protest?
So our story is a story of self-determination, which I think every nation, every people, every individual has a right to. And when you're talking about specifically the Artsakh movement in the 1980s, the late 1980s, you know, it started in February of 1988, really, and I was probably 2 weeks old when it started, which is kind of funny when I think about it. But it was the first time that through Soviet law, Armenians wanted to declare independence in Artsakh and rejoin Armenia. And it was about Miya Tsum. That was the chant. We wanted to unify. And the reason why was because there was this guy named Joe Stalin who decided that he would take this pen and arbitrarily carve out a piece of historically Armenian land and cede it to Azerbaijan and say, you know what, take care of it. He had a specific policy. He would intentionally divide up ethnic groups so that one ethnic group would not have power over the other. He moved the Chechens from the North Caucasus to Central Asia. He moved populations as he saw fit. And of course, with that came purges, political repressions, you name it, the gamut. Fast forward to 1988, you have Armenians who are asking for their self-determination under Soviet law. So they get hit by the Soviet government. They get hit by the Azerbaijani SSR, which leads to our own independence movement in Armenia in 1991. As soon as 1991 happens, it's all-out war. You're talking about 30,000 deaths, up to 60,000. We don't know where the accurate number is these days. And the culmination of an independent, self-determined republic known as Artsakh or Nagorno-Karabakh, which is what the international community calls it. And to this day, you have belligerence from our neighbor Azerbaijan. You have complete blockades. You have threats of President Ilham Aliyev saying, I'm going to go have fish at Sevan. I'm going to go walk into Yerevan, because he literally wants to start a war because he can't justify the legitimacy in his own country that he has. He is a dictator. He is a narcissistic head of a petrol oligarchy. And instead of giving his people the rights that we've been talking about today, it's easy to scapegoat the Armenians. Because you know what? We've been scapegoated for millennia. Let's put
right,
it that way.
Right.
So that's where the situation is with that.
Okay, so basically what's happening in Armenia today can, in fact, become another 1915 if we're not vigilant. I mean, that's what it looks
sure.
like. Because these Azeris, I want our listener, everybody should know, are basically carved out as well. They're basically the Turkish people, right?
Sure. So as the saying goes, I mean, you know, the Republic of Azerbaijan, Coca-Cola is older than the Republic of Azerbaijan. It was created in 1918. Again, it was just like how most of the African republics were created by England. It was just carved out. They decided, you know what, ethno group, you know, they're a little too far away from Turkey. So there you go. You guys are Azeri. We'll slap on that title for you.
Just to give it some context, because a lot of times when we talk about things like this, it's the Turks, the Armenians, but specifically the town of Tavush. Something happened there a couple months ago, and that's what stirred up the pot again. Can you talk about that incident?
So sure. So Tavush is the northernmost Marz, or the state or province in Armenia. So it's in Armenia proper. Where this has nothing to do, at least. Optics-wise, it has nothing to do with Artsakh.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Republic of Armenia proper, internationally recognized. And what happens is Azerbaijan decides on a whim in the middle of a pandemic to launch attacks on peaceful villages that happen to fall within Armenian territory right on the border. And in that process, not only are they trying to shell villages, they hit a they hit a factory that is producing PPE, so masks and, you know, all kinds of equipment for what we're facing today in the middle of a pandemic, right? And that, of course, escalates. You know, there's a loss of lives on both sides. We lost five Armenian soldiers, I believe. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the belligerence in the middle of a pandemic is just something that cannot be ignored. But because it has to do with the conflict itself, because Armenia is kind of unheard of on the global scene, it pretty much is unheard of. So it's up to us to raise awareness about it. And that's kind of how we ended up at the Azeri consulate in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And my understanding, at the protests, we were there not calling for war or more aggression against Azerbaijan for what they had already done. We were there specifically calling for peace, mm-hmm. calling for the same ceasefire that the United Nations has asked numerous countries to agree to amidst this pandemic. And while we're at this protest, calling out for peace, we're met with a counter demonstration by a group of Azerbaijanis who, like the various other protests we've seen in Baku and other places, they're not just saying, they're literally calling out for kill them all is part of their chants. Wow. You know what I mean? Wow. Let them die. In Baku, we heard them chant the same thing a few days later. End the pandemic, start the war, is the chants we're hearing from these Azerbaijan groups. So every time we're protesting, calling for peace, we're met with aggression by Azerbaijani counter-protesters. It's something I've never really seen before, and it's why this incident, specifically in Los Angeles, where Father Bagramian was hit, was surprising to me. We are there calling for peace, and we're met with aggression. And that aggression ended up resulting in us being silenced. And we're seeing that happening in various other places. I believe in Moscow and in Berlin as well, these same sort of counter-protesters come, and a situation arises where it gets violent and the protest needs to come to an end, like it happened in Brentwood. And that's, I think, part of their strategy, is to create this sort of unrest where we're not allowed to voice our opinions and protest, mm-hmm. even though the protest is calling for peace,
right?
Which is really an outrageous concept. But I think that's something we're going to see more of from Azerbaijani intentional counter-protesting like that.
So the chants were kill them all to the Armenians.
Things of that nature. I forgot what the exact quotes were, but they were not peaceful.
I think this makes the point of why we're doing this, why we need to keep talking about this. It always amazes me that at April 24th, when we're looking for people to recognize the genocide, that it's even a conversation. Well, let's discuss it. You would never think about somebody saying, let's discuss the Holocaust, or let's discuss slavery in this country. For some reason, the Armenians, why discuss it? It's happening in the same way with this. I cannot imagine any other ethnic group today on this earth allowing another group to say, kill them all publicly. Publicly. Where would we be? Where would any other ethnic group be right now? But for some reason, it hits us, and we're supposed to deal with it? I don't know. And to me, this is the strongest case made for why these two gentlemen are here. And I only wish you the best, because ask everybody to, as Greg said, educate yourself, learn about these things. You know, we are a small, there's more people every single day on Los Angeles freeways than there are Armenians in the entire world, you know. So let's put it in perspective. If we don't make some noise, if we don't know our own history, nobody else is going to be teaching that. So that's the preaching from me. But I'm going to give you guys the parting shots on today's talk.
In terms of people educating themselves, the main thing I'm surprised people don't know is, when they have a right to be searched, what they can say to an officer under a certain circumstance when an officer is asking them questions. There's that kind of beginning interaction with officers that I'm really shocked people are not familiar with. And I can go over that in a lot of detail, but it's difficult because each scenario is really different. Obviously, it depends on if you've just done something wrong versus if you're in a peaceful protest. For today's purposes, when you're involved in a protest, you should be complying with an officer's requests to be on a certain side of the street or to be out of the street or whatever it might be. An officer's commands is not a violation of your civil rights automatically. An officer telling you have to stay here or wait here or do this. But oftentimes it gets to a point where you're like, wait a minute, I have a right to be here. Why is this officer forcing me to do otherwise? And people think, I'm going to just do it anyway. And that's when you're met with a certain amount of force. Instead of being hit with the violation and getting some sort of redress through the courts or whatever process it might be. Mm-hmm. But you never want to face an officer who's telling you a command, whether it's lawful or not, and blatantly violate that command. It's just going to lead to a situation where you're going to get hurt, and it's unnecessary, it's avoidable. And things are changing with the department slowly. While they're getting worse, certain things are starting to get better. Mm-hmm. And so many things have come out in the news recently with respect to the Los Angeles Police Department, the County of Los Angeles, hiding evidence with respect to people's with respect to violations they've committed, internal mafia groups within these departments. All these things are finally coming to light. And they're coming to light because of good officers within these departments, I guess, blowing the whistle on what's happening within these departments. So things are changing. Finally, there's a sense where these officers can come forward and say, I've seen enough of this. This needs to change. So I have great, great hope for where this country is going. We're going through this very awkward, uncomfortable time where people on one end think the other side is completely crazy, and the other side thinks the same thing about their ideals. But I think we're going to come out of this in a very, very good way. This is a defining moment for our country. I'm really looking forward to seeing where this leads.
I appreciate that optimism. Yeah. I mean, what it is from your mouth to God's ears. Joe, do you want to summarize?
So, I mean, to keep it short, I mean, Greg did a great job of it. From a criminal standpoint, you have your Fifth Amendment rights. I mean, what does that mean? In layman's terms, it means shut up. It's very simple. If you have a constitutional right against self-incrimination, so a lot of times I will tell people, don't talk more than you need to. Mm. Remember, it's the state's job to prove the case, especially in a criminal context. And you have the right to remain silent, and you should exercise that right as often and as early as you can. That's number one. Number two, you have the presumption of innocence, which is a lot of things, like I think we were discussing this earlier, that a lot of people don't understand. You're innocent until proven guilty. It is up to a competent prosecutor and a competent court with a competent jury to find you guilty. Until then, you are innocent. And I think it's very important for people to understand that you have your rights. You have your Fourth Amendment rights against unlawful searches and seizures or unreasonable searches and seizures. We always talk about our First Amendment rights, but you have constitutional rights that go in through every amendment. And some of them happen, I would argue, some of them are just as important as the First Amendment, if not more important. Mm. So I think it's important to be mindful that when you are stopped, if it's a lawful order, you stop, you comply. If you don't have to consent to a search, the officer can reasonably ask for a warrant in those scenarios. So I think it's very important to be mindful of those things. Of course, it does vary situation to situation. There's a totality of circumstances, and you know, but that's going into the weeds with the law. But there are basic fundamental rights that you have as a human being, and it all starts with our Constitution. And those basic fundamental rights are essentially universal human rights, but I don't think a lot of people have that understanding. So I think it's important to be educated on those things.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you again for coming and sharing these ideas with us, the audience.
Thank you.
And I think I want to end it just saying God bless America, that we have this opportunity to sit here and talk and discuss. And I think I always like to end it with that because we really don't realize what a privilege it is to be able to have this kind of open conversation. So thank you for obliging me, and God bless the two of you.
Good luck. Thank you for having me.
Well, there you have it. Joseph Kazazian and Greg Giragostian, both lawyers practicing here in Southern California, one a criminal lawyer, one civil rights lawyer, but more importantly, both of them offering a wealth of information about basic rights, human rights, civil rights, the need to stay vigilant in pursuit of those rights, the parameters of protest, and most importantly, the need to educate ourselves. I think that's the one thing that I walk away with. It's just how important it is that we know what we're talking about. What that education process just doesn't stop because we know about the Armenian Genocide. But to get involved about the ramifications of that event 100 years ago. Sure, the Armenian Genocide took place over 100 years ago now, but it affects life today. It has implications for today, and it's more than just history. So I want to thank both of them, both Greg and Joseph, for being our guests today. This, by the way, is the audio portion. There is a video portion, as we did a video vodcast, actually, for the Western Diocese. And I want to do a shout out to my dear friend, Aram Mosoyan, over at the Western Diocese, in charge of the media department, for getting us this soundtrack, and he's working on the video production, which should be available next week, and we'll definitely have links and share that with you as well. So you get to see the nice faces of these guys as well. Okay, well, the piano player is here, so that means we got to let Susie have a few words, and I'll be back for some parting shots.
Here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world, and look forward to your continued support. Thank you, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that wonderful announcement. And thank you to all of our listeners for your love, your support, for your kind words, your thoughts, your expressions. They just go a long way. They really, really help us get from one week to the next. I truly appreciate them. If you want to drop us a line, we're at feedback@epostle.net. That's apostle with an E. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic universe. Hey, listen, I know I promised you some updates on what we did at Yetem. It was a great trip. We had a great time over there. It was a pilgrimage, a true pilgrimage where we were renewed spiritually. I'm going to leave that and share it with you next week. I did promise this week, but when we had this chance for this interview, I thought this was pressing and kind of like bumped Yetem. We'll get away. Yeah, we could bump Yetem till next week. So we'll carry that next week. But for right now, I just want to invite you to check out the show notes so you can get more information about everything we talked about today. And then do continue to stay in touch with us throughout the week. We're on all the socials as well as the mothership inissues.org. Well, that wraps it up for us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of the wonderful team who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vazgen inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off balance top limits.